Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, Brooklyn. What's going on? I'm Chad Pagano. I'm a former Army sniper, a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and an avid lifelong hunter. And you are listening to The Wild Game Domain from the Hunt to the Hearth, airing live on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm joined on the phone by my brilliant co-host, Jesse Riley. What's up, Jesse?
Hey, Chad. How are you?
Why do you laugh?
So you're, much, as always.
No problem. You're the brains of the operation. Why do you laugh?
Well, I laugh because you're very generous to me, and you're the funny guy here, and you are really brains, too. So.
Well, don't tell anybody. Don't let that get out.
Perfect.
Today, on today's show, we've been doing the Second Amendment. We've been doing the business aspect of hunting, and we kind of, for the last couple of episodes, we've been saying, man, we got to get back to where we started here. We got to get some recipes. We got to start talking about food again. And with the start of the deer season here in New York, it started October 1st. I've been out a few times. We can mix that in. We decided we should do a recipe, what do you want to call it? A recipe go-around? A recipe battle?
Maybe like a friendly go-around. I mean, because here's the thing. Here in the U.S., I think it's very informal, right? People have these old family recipes. They have, like, the neat things they do that have been passed down. And why don't we play United States and Europe against each other today?
All right, I'm USA.
Okay, I'll be Europe today.
So that, you know what that reminds me of? When we were growing up, I was just talking with someone. I don't know, you're younger than me, but when I was growing up, we used to play war as young boys. Uh-huh. I know. Don't call me. I know you're not allowed to play war anymore as kids. You're not allowed to have fake guns or anything like that. But when I was growing up, I had an arsenal of plastic and wood guns that I could break out. And we'd meet all the boys on the block. We'd go into someone's backyard and we'd argue for about an hour over who was going to be the Nazis, who was going to be the Japanese, and who was going to be the USA, you know? And I would always get my way. I'd be the USA. And of course, it was known if you were the Nazis or the Japanese, you had to lose. You know, you made it tough and you killed a few Americans, but you had to lose. That's what it kind of reminded me of just then. So you'll be Europe.
Okay. I'll be Europe. But I'll be, you can't get on me for this because I'll be the French, okay? I'll be the French and kind of like the Italians, and they're on opposite sides. So.
Okay. No, I respect that. But you know what's funny? As much as I try to deny my Italian heritage, right? You know, I'm always saying I'm American. A lot of my recipes are kind of based, you know, they've been Americanized, obviously, but they're kind of based on these Italian, Mediterranean kind of feel to some of my dishes. So, you know, call me out on that if we go. But being the gentleman and the American here, I'm going to do the right thing and allow you to start with your recipe.
Okay.
How's that?
All right, so I'll start. And I'm going to start with something that they do in France, but you don't really see here too much. And I think it's a great thing to do with venison because you don't need a particular cut or a good cut, which is a rillette. And you say, well, what's a rillette? And some people think because it sounds like, ooh, rillette. Is that like some intestinal thing? And it isn't. It's not. It's like basically you're taking the meat and you need some other fat. And in France, they technically and traditionally they'll use a pork fat. The land of pork.
Yep.
So they'll use a pork fat, and then they take like a bouquet garni, which is really just some parsley, maybe some thyme. You could wrap that around a leek or something, and or like do it with an onion. You know, onion pince, which is when you take an onion and you take some cloves and bay leaf and you push them all together, and some garlic and sage. And they have a thing that we don't have here called sandu, which is a pork fat with salt that they actually spread on bread. It's pretty good. So basically, the procedure is that you take everything, you cut it up fine, salt and pepper, and you're going to cover it with water, and you're going to cook it for like 3 hours. And what happens is it becomes very, very soft. And traditionally, with a fork, you kind of pull it apart. And what people do is that's their way of holding it over, because you can cook it,
right,
pull it apart, you make a paste out of it, which is absolutely delicious. And then you can take glass jars, the small ones, you know, like it's a half-pint jar, and you put this paste mix in and you top it with the pork fat. And you can keep it in the refrigerator, and you ever want to, like, just spread it on toast, it's delicious.
Yeah, that's very, you know, very European, Jesse.
Yeah, very, very European, and it's like a little go-to snack, a little Benton go-to snack.
Look at that. You see, now, for me, my recipe, and I know I'm supposed to be American here, but I'm going to do a stir-fry. And let me justify this. Okay, let me justify this. You know, it's hunting season. I spend a lot of time living in a tent up on our hunting property. We have a camp stove. This camp stove, you know, it's propane, and it gets really, really hot. I mean, we have a Weber grill up there. We're living large. I have my Coleman.
Okay.
But we have this single burner. It's kind of like the stove you use to heat the oil for frying turkeys outside. You know, it's kind of like that. Mm-hmm. It's got a three-legged stand, and it burns blue hot. I mean, this thing gets hot. So after hunting, it's me, my partner, maybe another guy, you know, we're hunting all day. We're out in the woods. We maybe eat a cereal bar, you know, one of those breakfast bars during the day. We're starving, man. You get back. The last thing you want to do is have to, you know, cook this elaborate meal where you know, it's going to take an hour and a half, 2 hours to prepare. We don't have time for that. We don't get in till 7 o'clock. Let's get something hot, make it delicious, and get it on the table. So, you know, what we did last week, we decided, you know, my buddy was like, hey, how about a stir fry? And I was like, that's actually brilliant. So what I had done, I had already trimmed some venison I had left over, and it was basically like a venison. I had a couple of steaks in the freezer, so I broke them out, defrosted them, and I trimmed them, you know, about a quarter inch, maybe even a little thinner, about, you know, the width of the steak, one, you know, probably about 3 inches, 2.5 inches long, quarter inch thick, and I made a marinade in basically in advance. So I did 2 tablespoons of like a dry sherry, I did a half teaspoon of salt, 3 tablespoons of soy sauce. You got to have soy sauce, right? Stir fry.
Uh-huh.
1 tablespoon of starch. I use cornstarch here in America, right? Mixed with equal parts, about double the amount of water. So 1 tablespoon of starch, 2 tablespoons of water. I used 1 pound of venison, trimmed, like I said. 1.5 cups of peanut oil for my stir fry. I like peanut oil. You could really use any oil. But the peanut oil is very nice. I like it a little spicy, so I used 4 fresh red chilies. I used 1 red pepper. It's just what I grabbed at the supermarket. 3 garlic cloves. 1 bunch of cilantro that I had already pre-washed and rough chopped and put in a bag with some paper towels to keep it nice.
Keep it nice.
Threw it in the cooler. 1 tablespoon of soy sauce and 2 teaspoons of sesame oil, and you'll see what that's about at the end. So your meat's all prepped. You're going to heat the peanut oil in a wok. I brought a wok with me to put right on, and it fit perfectly right on our camp stove. And you're going to get that brutally hot. I don't even know how hot. It was probably, you know, that oil I put in, the peanut oil, was probably 350 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Brutally hot.
Right. You're practically at frying temperature.
And this is funny because my man, our producer, Jess, not to interrupt, but remind me where we were there. I'm heating the oil, so we're just at the beginning of the recipe. Yeah. I just got word that we actually have a caller.
Yes, we have a guest on the line.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Hello, guest. How are you?
Hello, this is your lovely wife.
Oh, my God. My wife's calling,
Jesse.
Oh,
amazing.
That's surprising because I thought I had a couple of feelers out today because let's be honest with the audience. We did very little preparation for today's show. And I was like, oh, God, how are we going to fill a half hour? And then I called my buddy Chris Reynolds. You remember him?
I do.
The cop. And my wife, Jennifer. Jessie Riley is also on the phone. She's one of my co-hosts here at the Wild Game Domain.
Hi, Jennifer.
Oh, hello. Nice to speak with you. Yeah, nice to speak to you.
So I expected Chris Reynolds to be calling, but it's always nice when my lovely wife calls in. And I know she's loaded with recipes for venison and wild game.
Oh, that's what you wanted me to talk about? You want to talk about recipes?
I'm only kidding.
It's funny, Chad, because you remember a couple of shows back, I wanted to speak to your wife, Jennifer, to find out about like what happens from her perspective when you go off for hunting season.
All right. So we're here. Jen, I know my wife is a working lady. She's educating the youth of America there out in Oceanside, Long Island. I know she's very busy. Do you have a second to tell her what goes on from your aspect?
In the area of hunting?
Right.
Where you pack up in early hours of the morning and head out and abandon your family, leave us to fend for ourselves with Campbell's soup and chicken nuggets.
Right. Well, that's maybe that. I like that side of it. Yeah, but maybe start a little earlier. Like, when does the hell start for you, really? Like, you know, is it September, October? You know, October 1st is opening day, but do I start?
Well, you know, the preparation starts. It's always the preparation for the hunting season. We have to buy, prepare, get supplies, think about, you know, listen to the weather and the predictions of when the rut will be and when we should be leaving and, you know, suit up, stop at Cabela's, make sure we have all our gear, our safety and necessities.
Right.
That's always, we're always looking for gear and safety necessities for out there in the wilderness.
Right.
And then eventually, like in September, is when we start scouting. We go out, we hang the tree stands, we, you know, make sure we have our area all secure. You know, this year you did that tent.
Yep.
Your all-weather tent.
Right.
And you set that up, and we have to go and visit. And in actuality, it's actually a good hobby to have, I believe. It's productive. It's, you know, you bring back meat, that's good. I like to save money. So, to me, that's a positive.
Well, granted, I mean, with all the money I invest in this, that meat's probably like, you know, $100 a pound, but...
Correct. And, you know, there's big dreams of buying land.
Right.
Right? Buying a house, living off the land.
My
when
goals.
When the apocalypse comes, we'll be good. That's always good.
See? I have a wonderful wife who understands me, even though I know in the back of her head she's like, oh, he's such a jackass. Like, there's going to be an apocalypse. There's not going to be a friggin' apocalypse.
Well, you know, I love the doomsday shows, doomsday preppers, so it works for me.
You're starting to see there's other crazy people out there. It's not just your husband. There's other maniacs who are preparing for the apocalypse, right?
I know. You have a few friends, I know, out there.
See, I didn't know if you were just going to be, like, so diplomatic about it, but it seems that you really do understand it and appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. No, you know what? In life, you're a couple. You need everyone to be happy. This is what makes him, Chad, happy, and I'm sure many others out there, that they need this time to be one with nature, to get back to the roots and what they need to do. So I'm all about, you know, if it makes you happy, go for it. And that's what we do. And he goes, and he goes, and he goes. And I pick up the slack at home, but it's all good. It's all good in the end. It always works out. And my house is a lot cleaner when he's gone. So there's pros and cons.
What are you talking about? You sequester me to the basement anyhow with the animal shower. I got a shower in the basement downstairs. You know, I have my own separate basement. But that was very nice to hear. I mean, I don't know if it's great radio. I was hoping my wife would be like, you know, I'm sick of him. He spends too much money and all that. But I appreciate that. And I always say nice things about my wife because maybe I don't tell her enough, but I'll tell the whole world. You couldn't ask for more, man. I hear guys talking about going hunting and, oh, my God, my wife. And even the guys I hunt with, you know, are like, oh, I don't know. I got to check with my wife and find out. She's doing a lot. No one does more than my wife. We have three kids, three needy kids. I mean, I only wanted two of them. The third one, who I do love, came in. It would have been Right. She's awesome, and I love her to death. So, Emma, when you're listening to this in a few years, just make sure you got it right. I was just trying to talk your mother out of having you. But now that you're here, I do love you, but I said I will not do anything with this kid that requires work. And my wife does everything there, and she's I couldn't ask for more. She's a wonderfully supportive, just a great lady, and I'm lucky to have her.
Did you want me to go the other spectrum?
Maybe. You know what?
We use too many paper towels. We need a cleaning crew when you cook. We need a safety police officer in the kitchen because you leave this pilot's lights on. Good thing we have dogs to eat the scraps off the floor that you spill. Homework's not really important. Shouldn't happen on a Sunday or a Saturday.
Sunday's a day for God and relaxation and football.
Right. Chicken nuggets and Campbell soup's not a good dinner.
No.
Ravioli's from a bag, not happening.
No.
Laundry, I can't do whites. You can't do anything else. We don't vacuum. We don't do the taxes. We don't. We food shop without coupons. Like that, you wanted?
Yeah, thank you.
Is that good?
Yeah, okay. You wrapped it up.
On that note, I got to go back to work because I have to make money so you can food shop and hunt.
You do, because I want to talk to you about that. There's one other thing I got to buy. Remember when I told you there's one other thing? Well, there's one other thing. One other thing this time.
Oh,
silence. No, I'm only kidding. I'm messing with you. I knew that would get you. Because I always tell her, there's one more thing. There's one more thing. I'm done. I'm ready to hunt. So
I know.
And I think we're ready to take a break.
Oh, look at that.
Right.
Perfect timing. Thank you, sweetie.
Right.
I love you.
Bye. See you at home. Love you too.
All right.
Bye, Jen. Bye.
All right. Perfect timing. You're listening to the Wild Game Domain on heritageradionetwork.org. We're going to take a short break and be right back.
Knock you down, hit you straight on your knees. The dollar showed there ain't no pretty pennies. Invested all I had, every cent in both you and me. Time is tethered.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Hey, welcome back to the Wild Game Domain on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Chad Pagano, and I am joined by Jesse Riley, my co-host. Jesse, still with us?
Yes. Hey, Chad, that was a really nice surprise there.
That was
it?
A surprise. That was funny because I had set up another guy I thought would be calling. I told my buddy Chris may be calling in, so I assumed it was going to be Chris. But maybe my wife maybe heard me lamenting this morning to myself that... I didn't know what I was going to be doing today, the recipe, you know, the show, and she decided, you know what, maybe I'll call in. She's funny. You know, I got to say, my wife, that was really her. I mean, she's so supportive, and maybe I'm a little hard on her sometimes because she'll let me spend thousands of dollars, you know, spend hours and hours, days, weeks in the woods away from my family, and if she even just, you know, like sighs at something, I'm like, what? You don't support me. See, what are you doing? You don't. But, you know, 99.9% of the time, she's like, hey, do what you got to do to make yourself happy. If that's going to the woods and suffering for a week, go right ahead. So I'm really a lucky man. I forget that sometimes. So where was I? I was heating the peanut oil, right?
You were heating up the pan with the peanut oil.
Yeah, so you're in camp. You're popping a beer. You're ready to cook. The hunt is over. Hopefully there's a deer hanging on the meat pole, as we call it. And... now I got my peanut oil heating through, and I'm going to put, you know, about a third of the meat, give or take, right into the oil right there. And, you know, it's in this bag, so what happens, you drop it out, and it's all clumped together, these thin slices, right? So I have a spoon, you know, your gutting knife, whatever you have at camp, and you kind of move the meat around in the wok, and you're going to let it just kind of sizzle through for about a minute or so, you know. And then what you're going to do is just take that meat out. That's just, I use that first one-third of the meat to kind of flavor the oil, get everything ready in the pot. And I'll take that out, put it onto some paper towels to kind of drain. And then as that's resting, I'll put the rest of the meat in, you know, to cook it through. And what we're doing here is, you know, flavoring the pan with the meat, first thing, most important. You don't want to overcook the meat, but also, you know, making sure we're not cooling the pan down. If I put all that meat in, we got a big camp, I got a lot of meat, it could cool the pan down. So I cooked through all the meat at this point. It's on a paper towel right on the table next to my camp stove. And now I'm going to pour out about 3 tablespoons of the oil and have almost a dry wok at this point. You know, the oil was there to help with the meat, but now I want, you know, it's coated in the oil and there's some bits of meat in there and everything. We're going to let that heat through. And then once it gets really, really hot, maybe 3 or 4 minutes, you know, on that blue flame, we're going to add the peppers. I put the chilies in. I'm going to add the garlic, and I'm gonna cook that through. And that's all real quick, maybe a minute and a half at the most. At that point, I'm moving everything around the whole time. That's what's great about this. You're active. You're stirring everything in the wok. I'm going to get the cilantro. I'm going to deglaze with my soy sauce. And that's about another 30 seconds. You know, the cilantro is going to wilt really fast, release the cilantro oils, the flavors into that. And now I'm going to turn off the heat at this point, right? And the pots, you know, the everything's still sizzling. I'm going to add that meat back in for about 3 or 4 minutes. I have one of my underlings already at this point on the Coleman stove cooking my rice for me. So the rice is done, keeping warm on the side. So I stir that meat in another 30, 40 seconds, warm it back through, and then that whole mess gets dumped over the rice. And what we do at camp, we just keep it right in the rice pot, and we'll just dump the meat right on top, and then the guys come up and just take a spoonful of the meat, you know, the stir fry with some rice from the bottom. All the juices are dripping down into the rice, and we eat like kings. And that whole process with the little bit of prep I do, you know, at home before I leave, maybe takes us, you know, that's the whole process is maybe 10 minutes. Within 10 minutes, 15 minutes, we're sitting down to a hot meal at deer camp, and that's why I like stir fry. And you know, the thing about it is, there's always someone at deer camp, I don't like pepper, I don't like, you know, sometimes whatever I see when I'm at the supermarket prior to going to camp, like I did it with broccoli Rob. I'll do it with, you know, whatever vegetable happens to be laying around.
What cut do you like to use for that?
Really, it doesn't matter. You know, all venison cuts are relatively lean. You want a nice lean cut, something. And so, like, I've done mostly steaks, chops, things like that. I don't know if I'd use a loin or one of my better cuts on a stir fry.
Exactly.
You know, I want to save that for something a little more special. So I'm using my scraps, basically, for this stir fry. But it cooks so quick and so fast in that oil, you know, and again, the fat, the added fat of the oils that you use in the cook, it really make it nice and tender. And you're going so thin with your slices, you know, for the stir fry, that it really doesn't matter if it's a leg cut, you know, if you're using some of the tougher cuts, it really doesn't matter. That's the stuff you want to use for your stir fry, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice cut it really thin on a bias, right?
Yep, that's it. And, you know, I made a big deal in the beginning, 1/4 inch. I don't know that. You know, just really thin. Make sure they're uniform. You want them to cook through. And like I said, you know, I usually use steaks because my butcher always gives me a few steaks and they build up. I never, you know, you're not going to grill a venison steak. It's not like a, you know, a beef steak, cow steak, right? Where, so, you know, I always
use. You might have to give it a bit of a marinade first, I think.
Yeah, something like that. Or I'll cut up the steaks and use it for stews, things like that. I'm not going to. So it's perfect for a stir fry. And like I said, sometimes you just get in the mood. Forget about deer camp. You're at home. It's 4:30, and you're like, what am I going to have for dinner? Well, break out the wok you never use. You know you got one. It's under the cabinet. No one ever uses it. Break it out and use it. Get a quick stir fry going. It's really, really simple and delicious.
Now, you know, when I was away at my hunter training, a lot of people were talking about liver.
Yeah, man.
And, you know, do you do a lot of liver?
I do a fair amount. I mean, you know, based on the amount of deer I shoot, it, you know, which is minimal, right? If I get, like I said, in a banner year, I'll get three, and that rarely happens. Usually it's one or two deer per season, right? So I don't have a lot of liver laying around, but yeah, I do. I love, you know, even just, you know, simply sautéed liver with onions, something real basic. I love
it. Or the longer for French version, which would be pâté.
Yep. I love
it. Pâté. Yep.
Delicious. I mean, for me, I wouldn't go through all that.
Mm-hmm. But no, I think those things are nice because you have them, and it's not like you have to take the bit of venison you have that's in the cryovac in the freezer. I like those things like the rillettes and the pâtés and the terrines because you can have them in the refrigerator, and you can just slice off a piece and eat it.
Yep. No, that's great.
So it's like the big prep ahead and then the quick eat later.
Yeah. After I harvest the deer, when I'm gutting it, I always keep in my kit. You know, I have a kit with gloves, you know, my knife, everything I need for the gutting of the animal. And I always keep some seal-tight Ziploc bags.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll cut out the liver. I keep the kidneys. There's if I'm feeling really, really earthy, I've cut the tongue out of the venison.
Oh, yeah. I have some good recipes for that, actually.
Yeah, I do every year because, you know, maybe on the first deer, I always forget. Then the second deer, like on those years where I get three deer, I'm like, now I'm thinking. I get that. I cut that tongue out, and I save that. You know, and I only do it on the younger deer. I mean, the deer's mouth is a really brutal, brutally brutal, rough place to be, you know. That's their moneymaker. I mean, they eat the bugs, the whole thing. So I try to avoid it. Usually there's blood gushing out of the mouth after a good, you know, lung shot or heart shot, you know. So, but I will, you know, on occasion save the tongue. I've done, you know, braised venison tongue, you know, stuff like that. It's excellent. And people, it's funny because I just tell them it's venison, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you braise it, some beef stock. I use some juniper berries, which we know is very classic to any venison. Whatever you want, chilies, I'll throw bay leaves in there, you know, and I'll braise them for hours in this liquid. And then, you know, I'll serve it with like some prepared horseradish, maybe a nice, you know, a slaw, what I'll call a, you know, some kind of slaw. Even with mustard, it's excellent, you know, stuff like that.
Well, it's light, nice and thin. It's great on a sandwich.
Right. Or let's go crazy have a tongue sandwich. Absolutely. People, you know, I think people don't give it a chance. They're like, oh, tongue. And I know growing up, you know, the few times my father put it on the table, I was like, I'm not eating that crap. But as you get smarter and you start to expand your horizons and try new things, you realize there's so many parts, the kidneys of the, you know, I love the kidneys, the heart, you know, people forget about the heart of the venison. That's a delicacy in a lot of places. The heart's excellent.
So we're also turkey season, right? Don't we have a fall turkey season right now?
You know what? It's funny. You're absolutely right. I've been seeing a lot of turkeys from the stand. I haven't gotten a shot yet. You know, I'm primarily deer hunting, but it seems to me when I'm turkey hunting, I never see turkey. When I'm deer hunting, they seem to know, and they come around. You know, I had some the other day. I was up in my stand.
Like, haha, you can't shoot me.
These things were coming, I mean, at a 90-degree angle right into my stand as I was facing, you know, I was facing out. They were coming in from my left, and I was like, all right, you know what? If these turkey walk under me, that one of them are dying, you know, and I'm glassing them with my binoculars, and I'm looking, and there's a nice-sized gobbler, probably a, I don't know, from the tree stand, it looked like it was 20 pounds, give or take, you know, so that's a nice-sized turkey, man.
That's pretty big, yeah.
Yeah, even if it's under, you know, let's say I was dreaming it's 15 pounds, that's a nice turkey. And they were coming straight for me, and they're amazing animals to watch. They're scratching, they're looking for food, you know, and they're very militaristic in how they approach, like two hens will come up, and you could see they're pulling guard. They got their heads up. They're not scratching, looking for food. And the other ones behind them are just working their way up behind them, scratching and looking, you know, for something to eat. And as they approach, two more will take the lead, and they'll go up about 10 yards, and the rest of them will kind of fall back in. The other two hens will fall back in and start scratching. And they were working their way for about a good half hour right towards me. And then just as they got within, I would say, 30 yards of my stand, the guard out in front just started going left and kind of skirting away from my stand. They got to like 40 yards in front of my stand, which would be a long shot for me with my bow on a turkey. And then they cut back down 30 yards on the other side of me. They made this big loop right around my tree stand. And they never looked up at me. I'm convinced they didn't know I was there. It was just that they were like, oh, let's just go up here. The area in front of my tree stand's got a clearing. So I suspect they've either A, been through it a half a dozen times and know there's nothing there, or they were like, let's avoid the clearing, stay in the wood line where we're secure. We're not going to walk out and expose ourselves in this clearing. I don't know, but it was funny. And then they walked right around me. And as I was sitting there, I was like, oh, I would have had that turkey breast on the Weber grill back at camp today. It would have been delicious. But I'm sorry. And then I cut into all your time, Jess. You probably had a delicious turkey recipe.
But you know what? There's always next week.
There is always next week. You're absolutely right. I thought for some reason in my head, you know, I had this vision of like at least four recipes, but that never happened. My wife wrecks everything. She just calls in. She's so arrogant. Like, oh, I'm just going to call in my husband's show and do whatever I want. I don't care about his stupid show and what he has planned, right?
You know, we had talked about that, right?
I know. You know what we should do? I'm telling you, she's a very funny lady. We should dedicate a whole show to my wife where you could interview her, and I'll just jump in here or there.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And really, because she's funny because she didn't use the term because she knows generally, depending on my mood, I don't love the term. She calls the hunting season the ordeal. She doesn't say when is hunting season. She's like, when does the ordeal begin? And I'm like, why do you gotta call it the ordeal? It's passive aggressive. No, I'm just kidding. You know, it's the ordeal. When does it start? I'm like, October 1st. We've been through this. But maybe we'll do a show where she just calls in and you could really press her because she's got some funny stories. And she could talk about how when I'm cranky when I come home from hunting. As much as I love it, it's exhausting and it's brutal. You know, it's hard. I mean, we're out there, we're living in a tent and it's cold and we're hunting all day. It's exhausting. People don't realize.
So you get back after not being home and you're not in a good mood.
Right. So I'll come home after 3 or 4 days being out and I got to work really hard to try to be in a good mood because I'm just wiped. You know, I'm like, I got to go to bed and just get rest, but I want to see my family. So that's, we've always, you know, we have nice discussions. We've had go arounds about my mood when I come back because she doesn't understand. Her thing is, why aren't you in a good mood? You're doing what you love. And I try to explain to her, it's not so much my mood. I've been without people. I've been out of civilization for 4 or 5 days. Now I get in my car and I drive back and I'm on the Whitestone Bridge and people are cutting me off. And
speaking of cutting you off, we're out of time.
We are out of time. Jesse, thank you for calling in today. I really appreciate it.
That's great as always.
And unfortunately, that is all the time we have, and I'd like to thank Dedrick for producing and engineering and taking my wife's call, engineering today's show. You could always find archived episodes of The Wild Game Domain from The Hunt to the Hearth on heritageradionetwork.org or on iTunes as a podcast. You could check out our website, wildgamedomain.com, and we're live every Tuesday, don't forget, at 11 o'clock. If you want to call, see, it works. If you call the number 718-497-2128, call in, we promise. No matter what your view is, you want to agree, you want to disagree, you just got to say something, tell us about your hunt, call into the show. Dedrick will put you right through and you'll be famous.
Wait a minute. He has to screen the calls, okay?
Nah, I don't even care. Dedrick, do not screen the calls. The crazier, the better. Come
all
on,
right.
Jess.
Sounds good.
I hope some. I want all the maniacs out there to call our show. Please. I dare
screen
you.
The calls.
Right. Now I'm probably going to get fired. They probably don't want that.
Yeah, yeah. We can only take two lines, so, you know, not too many. But
all right. Only two people get the call. All right. So, all right. We'll see you guys next week. And don't forget, if you kill it, you better eat it. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.